Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
The T-Biz podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
The T-Biz podcast and blog connect you directly to experts in the tea lands. Listen as their voices reveal the news, innovations, cultural insights, and consumer trends that most impact the industry. Paired with Tea Journey, a digital magazine for tea enthusiasts, the Tea Biz portal is a global resource for everyone who loves tea. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. Iced tea demand expands in Europe. Iran shuns India for Sri Lankan tea. And tea and the stronger for longer dollar. Plus, locking away carbon. Shrey Agarwal grew up in Darjeeling, where his family owns the Salim Hill Tea Estate. Last year, he graduated from the well-known Birla Institute of Technology and Science at Pilani, majoring in mechanical engineering and chemistry. He founded Alt Carbon to permanently remove 5 million tons of carbon dioxide annually. He focuses on the tea industry alone using enhanced rock weathering, a geoengineering technique that speeds up the natural process of carbon removal from the atmosphere by applying crushed rock to soil. Editor Arvinda Anantharaman discusses his ambitions in this podcast. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia tea estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
National Iced Tea Day is an occasion to celebrate the rising popularity of chilled tea globally. Ready-to-drink tea is an out-of-home favorite and the backbone of vending and convenience. And tea over ice is a lunch staple in food service. According to Statista Market Research, iced tea consumption worldwide exceeds 45 billion liters, up from 37 billion liters in 2016. Mordor Intelligence estimated market value at $55 billion in 2024 and projects a combined annual growth rate of 4.8% through 2029 to reach $74 billion in sales, with Europe the fastest-growing region. Quote, Europe witnessed a robust growth of 25.8% in ready-to-drink tea sales between 2019 and 2023, reports Mordor. This surge can be attributed to rising health and wellness trends, a focus on sustainability, and cultural influences, leading to a flurry of product launches in the RTD category, end quote. Lipton, for example, recently launched classic lemon and peach iced teas into the UK market, and Unilever added lychee-flavored iced tea to its lineup. China, Japan, and the U.S. are leading markets, witnessing innovation in health and wellness and convenience. Over half of American adults, about 67 million in all, drink at least a cup of iced tea daily. In Japan, bottled and canned green teas are more popular than soda. Statista reports iced tea is more profitable than iced coffee at U.S. convenience stores. While energy drinks and soda take the lead, the average convenience store in 2022 earned a substantial $10,740 on average from the sale of ready-to-drink tea, slightly ahead of RTD coffee drinks. In the U.S., Pure Leaf, which earned $371 million in 2022, has pulled ahead of Arizona, which recorded $298 million in C-store sales, followed by Lipton Brisk at $215 million and Gold Peak, which earned $212 million that year. According to the Convenience Store News Industry Report, revenue at U.S. convenience stores in 2023 topped $814 billion, an increase of almost 23%. 34% of that total was from in-store sales, the remainder from fuel. The average location earned $1.85 million. Packaged beverages, including bottled tea, accounted for 13.7% of total sales, an increase of 7.8% industry-wide. There are 150,174 convenience store locations in the U.S. Demand for healthful beverages has turned millions of soda drinkers away from the sweetened soft drinks in flavor of naturally sweetened tea and herbals, including hibiscus, lavender, and cold-brewed black and green tea. It remains unclear why Iran stopped signing contracts to import tea and rice from India, but Orthodox tea supplier Sri Lanka has emerged as the benefactor. The abrupt decision may be in retaliation for India curbing fruit imports from Iran. Trading oil with the sanction-impaired Iran is also a concern, as India no longer imports Iranian crude. A $3.4 billion embezzlement involving Iran's largest tea importer triggered a similar disruption in November 2023. Iran was the world's ninth largest tea importer in 2022, spending $252 million on Orthodox processed black tea at quantities well beyond what India produces. Iran's tea organization, ITO, estimates domestic consumption to be 100,000 metric tons, of which 70% is imported. In past years, as much as 30 to 35 million kilos, approximately 21% of Indian tea produced annually, was shipped to Iran. Tea import volume has declined, and Iran is now pressing domestic growers to increase production. The Republic of Iran Customs Administration reports importing 33,683 metric tons of tea, valued at $185.75 million, during the first 10 months of the current Iranian calendar year, March 2023 through January 2024. Indian Orthodox tea is competitively priced about 40% lower than Sri Lankan tea, but available in limited quantities. Assam produces the most Orthodox tea at 50 million kilos, while Tamil Nadu produces 12 million kilos annually. Total production is less than 120 million kilos. Sri Lanka, in contrast, produces more than 300 million kilos annually, earning an average $5 per kilo at auction, a significantly higher price than Assam. According to the Tea Exporters Association of Sri Lanka, Iran dropped from 5th to 11th rank with a 50% decline in imports in 2023, but has regained its rank in 2024, purchasing 4,127 metric tons of Sri Lankan Orthodox tea in April, up from 1,385 metric tons in April 2023. Orthodox production totaled 231,138 metric tons in 2023, but less than 2% of that was destined for Iran. Neighboring Iraq was the top buyer of Sri Lankan Orthodox at 32.7 metric tons from January through December 2023. Indian exporters and government liaisons amplified a request as to why Iran halted imports after spending $66 million on tea and $642 million on basmati rice from April 2023 through September. But Iran has not responded publicly. Tea and the stronger for longer dollar. The value of the U.S. dollar relative to other currencies has surged 4% this year, since the dollar is the world's invoicing currency and has the most purchasing power. As the dollar appreciates, other currencies essentially depreciate, making the world poorer and less able to engage in trade, according to CME Group. Quote, it also makes countries with dollar-denominated debt less creditworthy, making it harder for them to purchase the U.S. currency essential to manage their debts, end quote, writes CME. Quote, since January, the dollar has enjoyed a modest boost against Europe's common currency, the euro, and other foreign currencies, an indication more capital is flowing into the U.S. than the other way around, end quote, according to U.S. bank analysts, who speculate that, quote, higher interest rates in the U.S. are likely supporting the dollar, end quote. Like most commodity prices, tea is denominated in U.S. dollars, which offers several advantages, including lower volatility. At high exchange rates, consumers paying in dollars see their dollars go farther. The downside is mainly at origin, where paying for fuel and fertilizer requires a lot more rupees and shillings. Right now, a dollar buys 83 Indian rupees, 117 Bangladesh taka, 128 Kenyan shillings, 133 Nepal rupees, 157 Japanese yen, 278 Pakistan rupees, and 302 Sri Lankan rupees. As the world's top tea importer, the strong U.S. dollar has lowered the cost of tea imports, spiking volume. The exceptionally strong dollar is great for U.S. consumers and service providers near the terminus of the tea supply chain, as they receive more goods and services for fewer dollars. The value of tea imports into the United States totaled $915 million by value in 2023, and is currently up 13% from January through April compared to last year. During that same period, volume increased by an impressive 21% to 38.8 million kilos through April. The biggest jump was in organic green tea, where volume increased from 220,000 kilos during the first 4 months of 2023 to 1.3 million kilos during the same period in 2024, a 489% increase compared to last year. Volume in 2023 totaled 104 million kilos. Black tea imports, which account for the most tea, are up 19% to 29 million kilos through April, about 70% of all imports by volume. According to the Brookings Institute, Japan's currency has fallen far more than any other G10 country this year. Green tea exports by volume to the U.S. during the first 4 months of the year are up 55%, with some categories showing 42%, 65%, and 100% growth over last year. The sales of organic green tea are up 473% compared to the same period last year. Business insight. But all good things come to an end. Inflation is easing, interest rates are calming down, and the eventual depreciation of the dollar against other currencies anticipated in late 2024 is expected to lower commodity prices measured in non-U.S. currencies, reports Reuters. Next, Arvinda Anantharaman in Bengaluru reports on this week's India Tea News.
India Tea News for the week ending 14th June 2024. This week saw good prices for some teas at auctions. Assam's Hook Malti fetched a record 1,506 rupees per kilo for their CTC BOP SN grade at Sale 25 in Kolkata. Hook Malti has been enjoying a record run this recent sale of their teas at Guwahati, also making it to the news for fetching upwards of 600 rupees per kilo. Hook Malti was from Bhaskar Hazarika at Dibrugarh, who took over his father's tea business in 2009 and has since sought to refine CTCT production to take it out of the commodity status that it carries. Bhaskar's efforts have been paying off, as in the last many years, his invoices have steadily made their way up the batting order, and in the last few years have consistently stayed in the top top three at Guwahati auctions. In the south, Kochi has been having a good run too for the last few weeks. Interest is high among overseas buyers, with exporters to CIS and Middle East countries active. Sale percentage has been high, upward of 90% for Orthodox tea. CTC also saw sale of 100% thanks to an active participation from Supply Co., which procures tea to supply via the Kerala State Public Distribution System. Kunur auctions also saw good sales, and looks like South India is being seen as a reliable source of Orthodox tea, especially as wage hikes in neighboring Sri Lanka are causing new concerns. And lastly, the Tea Research Association at Jorhat announced the winners for their first tech book competition that was announced during the International Tea Day this year. We saw an enthusiastic response as teams from 20 universities across the country participated in it. Jury included members from the Tea Research Association and also our very own editor, Dan Bolton. Winners were just announced. Team Orthodox from the Assam Science and Technology University wins first place for a novel non-chemical pest control solution. Second place went to Team Neurolinga from the PSG Institute of Technology and Applied Research in Coimbatore for an integrated weather and crop health monitoring system. Third place also went to PSG Institute's Team Doodle for the network of sensors that monitor plant condition for growers. The team members from the prize-winning team stand to win 50,000 rupees each as prize money.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish, N-I-S-H, at nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
Shreya Agarwal grew up in the world of Darjeeling tea, as his family owned the Selim Hill Tea Estate. Last year, he graduated from BITS Pilani, majoring in mechanical engineering and chemistry, and decided he wanted to apply his knowledge to supporting the Indian tea industry. His company, Alt Carbon, has set a goal to permanently remove 5 million tons of carbon dioxide annually by focusing on the Indian tea industry alone, using the enhanced rock weathering technique. We talked to Shreya about Darjeeling, about Alt Carbon, and also what it would change for tea planters here. Shreya, so I'll start by asking you about your connection to Darjeeling and tea.
I was born and brought up in Siliguri, which is a town that falls under the Darjeeling district. And being brought up there, of course, during the first 20 years of my life, I used to visit the tea estates very often, and I was very embedded in the tea industry ecosystem, but I never realized what condition the tea estate industry, the entire industry was, especially because you're naive, you're young, you don't understand the struggles that people are going through. It is actually post my education, which I did from, BITS Pilani, chemistry and mechanical engineering, that I actually realized that what are the different problems that the entire industry is going through. And that was really heartbreaking. There are only 87 tea estates in the world that have the GI tag of calling themselves Darjeeling tea estates. And almost all of them were up for sale when I completed my graduation. And that was shocking. So for me, during college itself, I was part of multiple startups, was founding team member in a consumer tech startup, which was Sequoia funded, then headed on to another Accel and Lightspeed funded startups. I remember this one actually very specific time, which was around 2.5 years back, when I headed back to Darjeeling from Bangalore, and And, you know, my family told me that, you know, we also have to sell our TSA because it's not profit making. I realized at that point in time is that it's important for people to step up and try to save the estate, try to create additional sources of income for not only the tier states of Darjeeling, but also the tier states of Northeast India and overall India. And in general, agricultural communities could benefit a lot from it. So that's primarily when I started to head out in the entire quest of finding additional sources of income for agricultural communities. And carbon credits seems to be a very promising avenue for that. So that's how the journey started.
It's interesting. Your brother decided to start Dorje and you chose to go after the carbon credits with Alt Carbon. What led you to the, I mean, yes, you talked about the things that you were looking at and being bothered by, but specifically with the education you had just gone through, and what year was this, and why carbon? You know, why did you zero in on that?
So I graduated just last year. So in terms of why carbon, we went through a lot of different ways of being able to do it. As you mentioned, my brother Spurs, he started a distribution channel to actually solve the same problem. And the same problem can have so many different solutions. And for me also, how I was thinking about it is that what can be more sustainable? What can actually bring Darjeeling into the forefront of climate action? When it was at that point, I mean, and still is, at risk of climate change. So how can that happen? Because, you know, our mother keeps talking about this when we are at Salem Hill TS State, that earlier you did not see the crows at such an altitude. Earlier you did not see so many other, you know, for example, the monsoon rainfall is now very concentrated rather than spread across, which was happening earlier. There were a lot of these climate change outcomes that you used to see in the TS State. And for us in the family, this was a very common, you know, dinner topic about, you know, thinking about climate, thinking about air, water, etc. And of course, that was one part of it where we wanted to actually, you know, create a social environmental impact with something related to climate change. And the family, by the way, had been studying about it for the last 4 years, you know, of different ways of doing it. So, but carbon credits specifically seemed to be a promising outcome for creating that additional source of income for not only the TS state manager and the owner, but also create lots of core benefits to the local communities that we would work with. Because if you're working with on carbon credits, you also have to involve the entire community and do it with them. And whenever you're involving the community, it leads to not only, you know, an addition in their income, addition in their social welfare, addition in lots of their own living standards, because you have to do, you know, parallel projects like a waste management project and a couple of others that helps the entire community as well. So that seems to be very satisfying. I mean, I'm still in my 20s, and I thought that if there could be something that I could do for the community in my 20s itself, why not take that risk and you know, be as ambitious as you can? Because it was a nothing to lose kind of attitude for me, and still is, by the way.
But in a nutshell, if you had to describe what Alt Carbon does, and...
Yeah, so we are, you know, a permanent carbon removal company. We are based in India, based in Darjeeling, working with the TS states of Darjeeling to begin with. And the idea is to stretch across the agricultural communities of India, of Bharat. The idea is to start with enhanced shock weathering, which is considered to be the most permanent and the most scalable carbon removal method in the world. Our primary moat is to be able to do it in India at one of the lowest costs in the world and the highest scale, which is scientifically proven by our different research papers as well. I can share that with you. We are a permanent carbon removal company, starting with enhanced shock weathering, starting with the TS states of Darjeeling, and focusing primarily on carbon removal in India.
And how does that impact directly the community? See, let's look at Salem Hill. Is that where your pilot project is taking place, at Salem Hill?
So our pilot project is taking place in another TS state that the family owns, which is called Kamna TS state. So I'll tell you how it impacts different stakeholders. Firstly, you know, we use an alkaline feedstock called basalt, as you might have seen in the video, right? Let's start with the first step of the entire supply chain, which is sourcing the basalt dust. Now, for sourcing the basalt dust, we work with crushers for whom the basalt dust that we source is waste for them. So they are gaining additional income because we source all our dust from them at a premium price. So of course, I've personally gone to all of these areas, Pakur, Rampur Hat, Birbhum, and these are areas which are, you know, not, I mean, they're very rural areas in different ways, and any kind of additional income for them matters. So that's the first step. Second is you're unlocking new transportation networks between a Pakur and a Darjeeling, because there's a lot of transportation that you have to do with all the basalt dust that you're sourcing. And by the way, transport accounts for a lot of emissions. So we also subtract every single transport emissions from our final calculation. We started with trucks, but in the future we'll go with rail. And so that's the second bit, where you're also unlocking transport networks. Now the third, which is one of the most important aspects as per me, the basalt dust that we're using, it's USD organic certified. It's, you know, the Soil Association certified. PRA has done, the Research Association has done its own study on it. It does two things to the soil. It helps in alleviating the soil pH. And second, it improves the crop yield, because it also adds calcium, magnesium, phosphorus. I can share the entire elemental composition and how it, every single element adds, does different things to the soil. Now in India, every 1 in 3 farmland has acidic soil. So there are two kinds of farmers. One kind of farmer who doesn't know what the soil acidity is like, or you know, how that really affects their crop yield, or, you know, they're just unaware. And why they're unaware? Because they know that they won't have the financial feasibility to do anything about it, even if they're aware of it. And the second part is, you know, people who are actually large plantation holdings, which is like the tea plantation, which know that the soil is acidic or basic, and they apply soil nutrients to neutralize the pH or alleviate it as per the crop's demands. Now, our pitch to both of these farmer categories is very simple, that, you know, we're going to give you free soil nutrients. We're going to first help you in analyzing what your soil is like, not only pH, but also carbon content, organic, inorganic, nitrogen, phosphorus, everything, the entire shazam. We'll help you analyze that first. And then we will be able to curate a best fit deployment strategy for you on the basis of how you would like the crop yield to be, how you would like the soil's targets to, how soon you would like to achieve them. And then we give the soil nutrients to them for free. We help them deploy it on their land. And by the way, we not only give the alkaline feedstock, but we also give organic manure free. And overall, it helps in improving the crop yield, and also, you know, helps in alleviating the pH, which of course creates additional income because of the crop yield increase. So far in the pilot, we've already seen around 40%, up to 40% increases. It is between 25 to 40%, depending on the crops that we're talking about, tea, rice, bamboo, are the three types of crops that we experimented on. Our main priority is to be able to scale very fast, because not because of the company's ambitions, but because it is important for us to scale to reach net zero faster. We have net zero targets as a world to achieve. And in India, especially, we're the first for-profit, you know, rock weathering company to be there. So it's important for us to lead the way. Now, for us to scale, tea plantations seems to be a good fit because of the scale that it has and gives, because on average, it's 400 acres. However, we don't miss out on the fact that it's also important for us to help out the smallholder farmers. So generally, whenever we tap into a single tea estate, we also tap into the neighboring smallholder farmers and give them additional soil nutrients to apply it on their land, which also helps them see a greater crop yield increase. So that's there. Every tea estate has 90% women partners that we work with. So what we also do is training sessions, empowerment sessions. For example, a waste management drive was done at Salem Hill.
How open were they to, you know, trying it out, especially something like basalt, which the dust, which is just not even from where, you know, the immediate area, and it comes from elsewhere. What sort of resistance did you face, or what sort of, how was that, how did that go?
Yeah, so when I started, my family, I mean, they themselves told me that, you know, whatever you're talking, it's not making sense at all. We're not going to give you any acre of the tea estate for applying this basalt dust. So it was a huge challenge. So it took a lot of, you know, scientific research. It took a lot of research paper sharing. It was a lot of knowledge sharing with the Tea Research Association of India to actually be able to convince people. So it was not an easy ride. It was a lot of friction. And especially when that happened, then I had to also convince the smallholder farmers, which was the rice paddy owners, the bamboo cultivators, to do it. What helps, of course, now that we have seen very good results, people keep calling me up and telling me that ki hamara khet itna hara ho gaya hai, kitne crop yield increase ho gaye hai. That is a very surreal feeling to have and a very satisfying feeling to have. And now, of course, there's a lot of pull around that entire area. They want us to operate in their tea estates, their rice paddies, because everybody thinks that, you know, I mean, people still think that who is the stupid boy who's giving us free soil nutrients and not asking anything in return. When I was giving that orientation session, they were asking me that, you know, aap kya vote mangne aaye hain? And I was like, nahi, main aapka vote nahi mangne aaya hoon. I'm just here to help all of you out. And all that I'm asking in return is that, you know, we work as a community, we work together. आपको कुछ भी डाउट्स हैं, कुछ भी चीजें हैं, आप मेरे से पूछें डायरेक्टली, एंड मैं आपका हमेशा आई बी देयर, आई बी अराउंड, एंड आई आंसर व्हाटएवर थिंग्स यू हैव, एंड या दैट्स, बट सो या देयर वाज अ लॉट ऑफ फ्रिक्शन, बट वी मैनेज्ड टू गेट आवर पॉइंट अक्रॉस, एंड इट वाज ऑल वेरी साइंस एंड डेटा ड्रिवन, बिकॉज़ दैट इज द ओनली लैंग्वेज दैट एटलीस्ट माय फैमिली अंडरस्टूड.
And all the and how often is a soil test? It's also sent to Bangalore to the Indian Institute of Science for testing, right? And how frequently do you do that? And what is the change you're seeing?
So I operate out of the Indian Institute of Science in Bangalore, where we had Dr. Shambhudha Mishra and Dr. Ramana Chakraborty, who lead all science efforts for us. I mean, it's a constant cycle of testing. I mean, the labs are always testing the samples that we have, because we do a lot of testing. We do three kinds of testing. We do it pre the soil deployment, where we understand the baseline scenario and we understand how much, you know, deployment needs to be done, what is the best fit strategy, etc. And what is the actual, can we even work with the soil in terms of rock weathering, because there are specific conditions that needs to be met for rock weathering to happen. And then once the basalt is deployed, then again, we take another set of samples to understand, you know, what is the overall deployment that has happened, and to create another layer of baseline where you have the soil as well as the basalt. And then you take it after the monsoons, you take it every 3 months. That's primarily the cycle that helps you understand the delta between what happened before and what happened after. So we have our own unique estimation technique within Alt Carbon that we developed in record time.
Is it a one-time application? And how does that work? And how feasible is that? And how expensive will it be, you know, in the future if a farmer has to adopt it?
Our mission is, you know, simple, that we are a farmer first company, you know, and we want to always prioritize what the farmers want. I mean, coming from Darjeeling, coming from the tea estate background, I've seen what kind of a carbon status the tea estates have, and it's very low, because nobody even applies additional carbon like an organic manure or biochar on their soil, which has reduced the crop yield massively. So for us, the plan is to keep helping them in topping up whatever basalt or whatever alkaline feedstock they want to alleviate the soil pH, and keep helping them do it. So as I mentioned, whenever we, you know, analyze the soil pH or the soil carbon or any other parameter for them, we create a multi-year kind of a best fit plan for them. And that helps us, you know, come back to them after 6 months, after a year, and, you know, again, help them deploy more amount of basalt or more amount of manure or whatever they require. So it's something that, you know, we as Alt Carbon bear the cost, and we will keep doing that for a couple of years till we are able to come up with the, you know, right strategy on how we can scale at the same time, reduce our own costs. But at the moment, the next couple of years, the idea is to be able to bear that cost. But yeah, absolutely, we will have to top it up every 6 months or every year, depending on the soil samples and the results that we have and the targets that the farmer has.
And what are you hoping to see? How are things at Kamala Estate now? Do the farmers feel it's an additional job for them, or are they able to see, are they able to see the difference already? What is the time it takes for people to start noticing the impact and the change?
In terms of rice, it takes around 4 months, because that's basically the harvest cycle. So we started deployment in January, and now that May has ended, it's actually the time when we have already, you know, analyzed what is the crop yield increase, and we're going to the next harvest season. We've already seen very positive results around Kamala, which is on rice paddies completely. And now we're going for a larger deployment. So the first deployment was on 15 acres, but now that the farmers were so happy that they offered 150 acres of land immediately around Kamala. So that's a very good proof point for us that, you know, on the kind of vote of confidence that our farm partners are now giving us. On tea, it takes slightly longer. So on tea, you know, there are two types of bushes that you can apply the basalt on. One is, so generally a tea plantation gets pruned. Some part of it gets pruned and cut like a bonsai plant 20-25% every year. So we tried our pilot on both the pruned plantations and the unpruned plantations. Our unpruned plantations are the ones that have given us on tea up to 25% yield increase. But on the pruned ones, it'll take us longer. So we'll be able to understand the crop yield increase maybe after another 4 to 5 months, primarily because it was in pruned state before, and it will take some time for the leaves to grow up and show yield again.
How far is the source of basalt dust from Darjeeling, and how accessible is it in terms of its availability? You know, I mean, is it some sort of a renewable source? How does that work with basalt?
Sure. So between northeast and northwest, between the Rajmahal traps and the Deccan traps, we have around 4,000 billion tons of basalt that's available. So in fact, India, again, coming back to the entire India and Bharat story, which ultimately motivated me to do this in India, India is the perfect geography to do enhanced rock weathering in. It gives you high temperatures, high rainfall, has abundant feedstock. You can do it at low cost and at high scale. And which is why companies are looking at, so, and it's important for us to tell the India story. But for me personally, it's very important that, you know, India leads the way for carbon removal because it can. Even with respect to basalt, the availability that is there, it is abundant to not only fulfill the carbon removal that can be done in India, which is around 150 million tons that can be done in India, but also it can be used to do it in the neighboring countries, in countries like Nepal, Bhutan, Sri Lanka, and a couple of others where, you know, you can always source the feedstock and do it. We are pitching to JP Morgan and Shopify and Mitsubishi Corporation in the US. They are very excited. In fact, they want to not only buy all the carbon credits that come out of the tea estates of Darjeeling. By the way, all of these Fortune 100 companies have huge mandates to buy carbon removal credits. So a JP Morgan has a $200 million mandate. A Shopify has a $50 million mandate. There are two big alliances, Frontier Climate Alliance and a NextGen Alliance, which is a $1 billion alliance each, which actively buy carbon removal credits. So by August end, we'll get our first, we'll be delivering our first set of carbon credits to them. So it's a very exciting time for us.
This is wonderful. All the very best, Shrey. Great chatting with you.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.